We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to KMOX anytime, anywhere. Download the Radio.com app today.
Mr. Trump has magic about him.
This is the greatest country in the world, but we do have some really stupid people.
How can I describe our leaders better than the word stupid?
This guy has magic coming out his ears.
This is the most unethical sham.
So in the words of my late friend Aretha Franklin, show some R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
Now, Mark Reardon.
I've never known a guy more talented at untangling politics so that anyone can understand.
On St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
And what a day for Mark Reardon to take off. Wow. This is Bo Matthews. That's Amy Mark's course. And this is the voice of St. Louis, KMOX. If you miss any part of the show, you can download the podcast at KMOX.com/Reardon. You can listen live by downloading the radio.com app to your device anytime. Hi, Amy. How are you?
Oh, hey, Bo. How are you doing?
I'm good. This has been a crazy day. I woke up early to see all the news that was unfolding, and so we got right to work working with Dave Klein and Fred Bottomer to put this afternoon together for the day off that Mark is taking. So good to have you here. Did you get a nap? Do you normally nap?
You know, I don't normally nap. I could. I like this afternoon shift.
Yeah.
Mark Reardon is sitting pretty like a king right here. I mean, you get to wake up, have some coffee in the morning, go for a run, do some errands.
And you said you did all that.
Yeah.
Well, today is impeachment article announcement day. And it was a big morning for both sides.
Yeah, it was. So the House Judiciary Committee, as the entire nation and world is talking about, they announced today that they are going to pursue two articles of impeachment against President Trump. And these articles of impeachment are focused on Trump's efforts to push Ukraine to announce an investigation of Joe Biden. So the two articles are focused on abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. And to break down kind of the nitty-gritty of what exactly is going on in Washington, we're going to welcome in CBS News correspondent Bill Rakoff on the Quiver River Electric Cooperative guest line. Bill, thanks so much for joining us on what is an eventful afternoon.
You could say that, yes. I've been holed up in my little booth all day long here on Capitol Hill. No running, no lunch, no anything. I'm a little jealous, actually.
How about some impeachment 101? There are two articles of impeachment, and what are they exactly?
Well, I think you nailed it, Amy. It's exactly this. They've made this a very narrow investigation from here on out and taken away a lot of the questions and speculation over what the president was going to be charged with. As you pointed out, the first charge is abuse of power, and that relates directly to the president's alleged holding up aid for Ukraine in exchange for dirt on the Bidens, the 2016 elections, and Burisma, the gas company that Hunter Biden was accused with. The second charge shouldn't be a surprise. It's obstruction of Congress. It's not obstruction of justice, but of Congress. And that's something that Adam Schiff all along has been saying could be a possibility because the administration has almost resolutely refused to provide documents, witnesses, and other information to the committees that were investigating the inquiry. The president himself saying that he's throwing all the eggs in the Senate's basket when it comes time for an impeachment hearing. So those are the two articles. A lot of people thought they could go a little bit wider. They could pull stuff in from the Mueller report, maybe had a bribery charge with Ukraine, but this seems to be the Democrats thinking that it's their best hope to get a conviction in the Senate.
Yeah, I was going to ask, there was some equivocation regarding the scope of what the impeachment articles would be. So why just these two?
Time is of the essence, according to Democrats, and so they wanted to narrow this down to two reasonably solid charges against the president, at least in their eyes, so that this is something they can take to an impeachment trial in the Senate, which would likely happen after the beginning of the year. And believe me, nobody wants this impeachment process to drag out much longer than January, if possible. Everybody wants to get on the campaign 2020. Don't forget, every single member of the House is up for re-election. Plus, you have the presidential campaign and quite a few senators, including Mitch McConnell, who's going to oversee a Senate trial. Well, he's up for re-election, too. So they would love to get this in the rearview mirror.
All right. We're talking with CBS News correspondent Bill Rakoff. And Bill, if you wouldn't mind telling us if you have heard any reaction from the president. I've been checking his Twitter. Of course, it's a lot of the same that he's been tweeting out quite a bit. But anything in the last hour that's come out?
No, nothing really. The president, through his spokesman, Stephanie Grisham, the White House press secretary, says that, he's relying on the Senate, controlled by Republicans, for a fair hearing. He says that's the only place that he's going to feels like he's going to get a fair shot at clearing his name. But it has maintained, as you point out, he's saying the same things in tweets this morning before the articles were announced. You know, he was saying it was a witch hunt again. That's a phrase we've hadn't seen in a little while, but it's come back. But says the Democrats are singularly obsessed with trying to take him down, and that's a theme that's been picked up on by congressional Republicans, who say that House Democrats have simply wasted a year of their majority in going after the president when they could have been doing many, many other things, like legislate. But Democrats will tell you they've been able to legislate as well. They point to all the bills that have passed the House that are laying in Mitch McConnell's graveyard, so to speak, over in the Senate. Plus, today they announced that they're going to go along with the USMCA. So on the day that the president has a couple of articles of impeachment announced, he also arguably gets one of his biggest legislative wins.
The Democrats used the phrase high crimes and misdemeanors. They didn't say bribery. They also know it needs to be more severe than maladministration, which is not included in any impeachment cause. So what is the high crime in this instance? And is it criminal or is it political?
No, this is not a criminal process. And this is kind of what drives some people bananas. It is a political process. Sometimes people say it's too political, given the partisan nature of all of this. But the high crime is the president abusing his oath of office and abusing the Constitution by, you know, demanding a foreign power do some political dirty work for him, not for the benefit of the country, but for his own personal political benefit. That's the high crime that they're talking about. And that phrase, by the way, goes all the way back to the framers. They were pretty smart about not trying to, you know, create a box and dump every conceivable offense in there, because they knew down the line, as the years went on, they wouldn't be able to account for all of that. So they left it open, a general high crimes and misdemeanors, and then it's up to the constitutional scholars to figure out what qualifies. And in this case, they feel like they've got two very solid charges.
So the immediate step for the Democrats, or even the House, in this process is going to be voting, and that could happen as early as late next week. Is that what you've been hearing?
So what happens now is the Judiciary Committee takes the articles back to the committee. They're going to have a markup hearing, which they do with any kind of legislation that they're going to send to the floor. And it's just a chance to debate, add amendments, and you can probably expect Republicans, as they have throughout the process, try to slow things down with amendments. It could be an awfully long markup day, but it is the hope of committee leaders that they can get it voted out of committee by this week, and that would set the stage for a vote on the full floor of the House next week before everybody leaves for the holiday recess. We'll see.
So, say the floor votes next week, then it has to go to the Senate. When does that happen, and how long will that process take?
Well, in technical terms, the Senate has to take it up immediately, but everybody's going to go home for the holidays. So what that means is there needs to be some negotiation between Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and the Minority Leader Chuck Schumer over in the Senate to talk about rules and you know, extending the rules so that they can take this up when they bring it back. Otherwise, you've got a bunch of unhappy lawmakers sitting through the holiday break here in Washington when they'd rather be home with their families. But because nobody wants to do that, that's pretty good incentive for the two leaders to try to work out a deal. So, long story short, look for this to be picked up sometime in the first, maybe second week of January. Mitch McConnell hinted at that this afternoon, but said it wouldn't come certainly before the break.
Bill, we got to let you go. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day today to chat with us.
Thanks for having me.
That was CBS News correspondent Bill Rakoff joining us on the Quiver River Electric Cooperative guest line. So I'm not sure, Bo, if you've ever had some bad ideas in your day.
No, they're all stellar ideas. What are you talking about?
Well, a teacher in Millville came up with an idea that has been quite controversial in a social studies class. It had to do with westward expansion and the free market economy, which sounds like you're on the right track until the issue of slavery was brought in and fifth graders were hypothetically buying and selling slaves.
And pricing, too.
We're going to talk about that next.
Miss any part of the Mark Reardon Show? Download the podcast anytime.
Initiating download. Stand by.
At KMOX.com/Reardon.
Bo Matthews, Amy Mark Scores, sitting in for Mark Reardon. Nobody really knows where he is, right?
Nobody ever knows.
Yeah.
He just, maybe he's hunting. He's a duck hunter, right? I think so.
Yeah. Maybe he's riding his bike or golfing. He's got a lot of hobbies.
It is a beautiful day. Maybe he's Christmas shopping for you.
Maybe. Probably
for
not.
For you specifically.
A Missouri elementary school is investigating an in-class assignment given to fifth grade students that asked them to consider the trade value of slaves on a hypothetical plantation. Also, what price to assign to those slaves. Yes, this happened in 2019. Even worse, it happened in Missouri.
In our area,
in the Millville School District at Blades Elementary, a teacher of a social studies class, and the kids were studying westward expansion, a bunch of fifth graders. A teacher gives this assignment to learn about what was the free market economy like during westward expansion. And some of the questions were quite normal on this test. It poses questions about being a fisherman and you have to trade your wares. How much are your fish going to cost or corn?
Yeah, and you live in a Connecticut River Valley. It's a good place to farm. So they do set the stage. It's not just about slaves. It is also bushels of grain or a bag of apples or tomatoes.
Anything you would have in a free market economy in the 19th century. Here is the question that is being investigated, and it blows my mind that this test wasn't vetted, or that any single person would think that this is a good idea. Here's the question for the fifth graders. You own a plantation or farm and therefore need more workers, the assignment says. You begin to get more involved in the slave trade industry and have slaves work on your farm. Your product to trade is slaves. The assignment then gave a blank line for you to assign a price per slave, as well as the instruction, these could be worth a lot.
It seems like, to me, that more common sense, especially for fifth graders, the teacher should have been more sensitive, obviously, because of the world we're in 2019. Personal thought. I do think, when I first saw the story, I thought, ooh, fifth graders?
Yeah.
High schoolers, college students might be more open to a conversation like that to try to set the scene. You know, how much is a bag of apples? How much is a bale of hay? That kind of thing. But still, in this day and age, you've got to be very careful. But again, fifth graders were given this question. And what was shocking to me was it was actually posted. It says on social media, a friend of mine's child brought this home from Blades Elementary School. A friend of mine's child. Why didn't the mom or the dad post this story? You know what I mean? It was like, oh, asking for a friend. Just to incite.
Would you have posted it on social media at first, or would your first instinct to be to go to the school?
I think a responsible person would contact the school directly. I mean, I think pretty much anybody could be on that page.
And this test, at least the test itself, because we have the actual test with every single question as well as the final page, which is a reflection page, there is no discussion about slavery. The questions are about the free market economy. The reflection page starts, after completing the activity, what do you think a free market economy was? The goods aren't free, but what choices do you get to make if you are part of a free market economy? Do you think you set your item at a good price to sell? Why or why not? Would you consider yourself wealthy after looking at what you have left over after completing the activity? Why or why not? This was not an informed discussion about one of the most horrific, grotesque periods in United States history. This is not about slavery and the inhumanity that was perpetuated. This is just about free market economy.
Right.
How would you consider this question okay?
As the teacher's putting the lesson together, I completely agree. Now, we do have a mother that is she's the mother of the parent of the child. Is that correct?
Yeah, this is Angela Walker.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Some students, my understanding is, had corn. Some had wood. In regards to my son, he had slaves. My husband is 10 times more hurt because being an African-American man, he even said to him, what are we doing here, bud? Like, do you understand there's no value on a life? There's no value to playing a game about slavery. We have to be more culturally sensitive. We do. We can say to get over homework assignments, it's just a homework assignment. That was 100 years ago. Yes, it was. But it's still someone else's family. Maybe there are people who don't see the wrong in it. We need to be talking about it.
That is one mother, Angela Walker, speaking to this situation, which, you know, you think about it, common sense has got to play a part. And, you know, a lot of educators, a lot of teachers are young, fresh out of school. Maybe they're trying to, you know, set the scene for their classroom. Again, I stress the fact that it's fifth graders. I mean, I think back to where my brain was in fifth grade. There's no way I would even be thinking about this, let alone the price of anything.
Yeah, it's, I even think, you know, for an older child, the structure of the test just doesn't make sense. If you're going to have a discussion about how little value the, you know, Americans in the 18th and 19th century placed on African-American lives and the way that these human beings were treated as a commodity, and you were using it as an example to say, look, this is a human being, a mother, a father, a sister, a brother being treated like bags of apples.
Right.
That's a discussion. I don't know that there is no context in which the structure of this test with those questions makes sense. Now, the teacher has been placed on administrative leave, and the rest of the school staff will have to undergo cultural bias training. My personal opinion is that this teacher was a total idiot who lacked the awareness and sensitivity.
Common sense. And to
not put this question on there.
Right.
Yeah.
But to be fair, this teacher has significant remorse. I mean, you may have said something to somebody that was just off the cuff, just
right,
in everyday situation. You say something, it's like, I didn't realize how horrifying that was that I said to that person. You know what I mean? Like, you say something, you mean it one way. They're just thinking, oh, this is going to be a great lesson for this, you know, this class. Taking it back to, you know, I'm married, mm-hmm, married 18, almost 19 years. There are things that I'll say. We'll be driving home from wherever we were, and my wife will look at me and go, I can't believe you said it that way. And I was like, oh, my goodness. Now that she pointed it out, you know, this guy probably thought he was going to go do this lesson and then go home for the day, and everything would be fine. If this test did not have the question about setting your price for slaves,
yeah,
it would be a completely benign lesson.
Of course.
Apples, hay, oil, you know?
Corn. It explains, for instance, one of the questions is, you live along one of the major harbors, ports in Massachusetts.
Sure.
The land isn't great, so you are a fisherman. You hunt whales and use their resources, specifically fat or oil, to burn. Set your price for a container of oil.
Right.
I mean, maybe the Save the Whales campaign wouldn't like that question, but, you know, there's that. It's just that when you are a teacher, you are leading youngsters, mm-hmm, and there is a greater responsibility on what you do and what you say. And I question how hastily this teacher was putting together this lesson, that it never occurred to him or her that this lesson could be offensive.
Right.
I think the biggest benefit of a doubt you could give a teacher like that is that teacher is so absorbed in teaching westward expansion and in that era of the 19th century America that somehow subconsciously was assuming everybody knows, wow, this is horrible, that this question will really highlight just how much the settlers placed zero value on the human life of African Americans. I don't think that's what it was, but
right,
that would be the most generous benefit of a doubt, that somehow it was this myopic decision assuming that he thought the kids would realize how bad it was, but man. Right.
And again, they were fifth graders. But if you've seen, there's a series called Hell on Wheels about the expansion of the railroad going west. Mm. And there are slaves involved in this. And I mean, for an adult to watch this and just see this docu-series, or not docu, it's drama of what happened. It's horrifying to see how how people were treated. The slaves, right. Just anybody along this process. But even in 2019, Amy, the most horrifying headline that I ever hear about that stops me in my tracks is human trafficking and sex slavery. Mm-hmm. That it happens today.
Yeah.
It just is so horrifying. So you would think that this educator, you know.
Because it's not that you shouldn't teach it. Yes, you should teach about this horrific period, but it's how you teach it. Mm-hmm. You can't just walk up to someone and go, oh, you'd be worth $10.
Right.
Especially not a kid. You have to be careful how you teach it.
Yeah. And the fact that, because I guess this lesson was written by the teacher, possibly.
Right.
So the question is, set your price for a slave blank, and then these could be worth a lot. That's that statement right there. Is just like the sucker punch. That
so
was like,
callous.
What?
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, and the thing is, I imagine most teachers would know not to do this, but now everybody has to suffer. It's like the sign that you see on the ski lifts in Colorado, keep ski tips up. That was put there because of an idiot.
Right. Okay. It's Amy Marks, of course, Bo Matthews, covering for Mark Reardon this afternoon. And if you miss any part of the show, you can download the podcast at KMOX.com. Friday's shooting last week by a Saudi national who was in the United States for Navy training left 3 people dead and 8 injured at the Naval Air Station in Pensacola in Florida. And coming up, we are going to talk to a man known as Mr. AT, Mr. Anti-Terrorism. Is that happening next? Yes, that is happening next.
And you know Mr. AT, don't you?
I kind of do.
We'll tell you how Bo knows Mr. Anti-Terrorism.
Why did I think that was going to be late? Okay. See, Mark, you need to. Okay. Amy and Bo for Mark. KMOX.
News Radio 1120. KMOX. The voice of the Cardinals.
It's Bo Matthews at Amy Marks Course for the Mark Reardon Show this afternoon. If you miss any part of the show, you can download the podcast at KMOX.com/Reardon. And you can listen on radio.com. It's an app free for your device. Talking about the shooting that happened Friday at the Naval Air Station, Pensacola in Florida. I believe the Blue Angels train there. It was a shooting by a Saudi national who was in the United States for Navy training. It left 3 people dead and 8 injured. I want to introduce you to a 47-year retired Air Force member who spent his last 4.5 years as anti-terrorism office at a base in New Jersey. And we'll talk to him because I kind of know him. Carl, are you there, sir?
I'm here. So nice to talk to you this afternoon.
Yeah, and Carl, Mr. Anti-Terrorism, how was it again that you know Bo?
Well, I think I didn't give him birth, but his mother did.
Yeah, you didn't do any of that work.
Wait a minute, Mr. Anti-Terrorism is Bo's dad?
It is.
Oh, my goodness.
47 years in the Air Force, and the last 4.5 to 5, he was in the anti-terrorism office. And they did call him, they still call him to this day, Mr. AT for anti-terrorism. But the question came up with you, Dad, last night was, why are we training foreigners and especially the Saudi nationals? And you shed some light on that.
Right. Before we get into that, I just want to let you know, pre to the show, at 2:44 here in New Jersey, we had a shooting in North Jersey. They don't think it's anti-terrorism associated, but the president has been briefed on it. We have one cop down, and they have a standoff now going. They have hundreds of cops in the area,
wow,
or police officers, and they're trying to resolve it. They have a U-Haul. They think that maybe pipe bombs. They're not sure. But anyway,
wow,
that's a quick part. But anyway, reverting back to what you just asked about training foreign officers, I want to go back even further than just right now, because when I used to teach safety, we had all kinds of officers from all over the world. We had Iranians, Saudi Arabians, Tunisians, Filipinos. We trained officers all the time from all of these other countries. The thing is that people don't hear about it because they're not involved with the military activities. But when I was going through anti-terrorism school, I went through the Army Police Academy. We had foreigners. We also had them in the intelligence school that I went to, Fort Huachuca. When I went to the critical infrastructure in D.C., I don't think we had any there. But anyway, one of my first questions to my instructor at the end of the day was, why do we have these people here? Tell them our tactics, our objectives, and how we do business. And his response, and he was a retired Army officer that was teaching, is because we want these countries to be afraid. We want them to know our capabilities, and hopefully they're going to take that back and not mess with us. So that's what I see, and that's what I heard.
So these guys are here training with our military primarily so they can see just how good and strong we are and then go back to their home countries and say, do not mess with these guys.
Absolutely. That's what the objective is. And I'll tell you, these people were very not involved. They stood off in their own groups. I was very concerned about that. Whenever we had situations that we had to enact, if I was with these guys, they would always pick me to brief because they didn't want to get involved. But we told them a lot of stuff. And without getting in any classified stuff, they know a lot of our stuff, what we do and how we do it. And they can take it back and turn that into poison, I guess.
So this,
but hopefully they won't. Hopefully some of these people will become, you know, lovers of Americans.
So the Saudi national who was the shooter at Pensacola, his training was in connection with the sale of U.S. military equipment to the country and was being funded by the Saudi government. How many countries do we have these contracts with? And are there any countries that we refuse to do something like this with?
Question,
like, would we do this with Iran?
Well, I'll give you a perfect example. I have a relative that works for a Saudi contractor. He's a retired colonel, makes a lot of money, but they love our technology and our interface and ability to get equipment, logistics support whenever we need it because they lack it. So we can push that button to get it. I had a general I worked for. He says, I'm not a smart guy, but I can push a button and I can have anything I need any place in the world. And that's what they do.
But you did find, you said this has been going on for decades, that we've been training foreign nationals for their skill set. I mean, because they're buying planes that are bought in America?
Yes, yes. In fact, I had the first Japanese that bought the first C-130, our cargo plane, come to the base that I was at in Arkansas. And he kind of became my good friend because they knew I was stationed in Japan, so they put him on me. He ended up coming to my house. We become good friends. But they were always seeking information. You know, they're always looking for more data,
right?
You know, whether it's mishaps or whatever. I want to give you one thing that I went to school at McGuire actually it was a federal penitentiary, not as an inmate, but as a student.
And he was on vacation. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I met the imam, the person that was a Muslim leader that had to go to all the prayer meetings where these prisoners, you know, met every day. And he says to me, he says, I want to tell you something. There's one thing about your people and my people. Your people look on a horse ahead, straight ahead. My people sit on a horse looking backwards for 2,000 years. And that's where we've got this jog in the road of where, you know, they are versus where we are as far as their tactics.
That's pretty profound.
Yeah. You know, and maybe I'm cynical, but especially with a lot of these countries, especially the terrorist organizations or the official governments that sponsor terrorism or are run by tyrannical dictators, when there is an ideological gulf and there's no parallel, you know, with the Cold War, at least, you know, the Russians didn't want to die. We didn't want to die. But when there's an ideological warfare and death is not necessarily a deterrent, is this program successful?
Well, I don't think we're ever going to see a success and it's going to go away because they're not going to change their idealism. You know, the thing that we have to be worried about is the new tactics. You know, we used to worry about terror cells, which was a group of people. You would have a finance person, you would have an actuator, you would have a planner. They don't do that no more. They use these lone wolves, or that's what they try and attract to do the sole hit. Not that the terror cell couldn't do it again, but the fact that they're not using that tactic now, we don't know what the next tactic's going to be. Yeah. The person they would like to get is the person like you and me. And when I was doing my job, they actually had a price on my head. It's probably worth more than what it really is now. But you know, they're
depreciated
they're always
a little bit.
Yeah, we got a junk title on them. Let me just explain. We're talking to my father, who spent 47 years with the Air Force, retired now, and he spent the last 5 years of his career specializing in anti-terrorism. They even called him Mr. AT. Before we let you go, and we're going to do that very shortly, do you see the program continuing, Dad, that is going to benefit this country because we're training mostly our allies, correct?
We are training our allies, but we're also training our own. In fact, the military's got so complex that I speak to police officers all the time that come to the place where I work now. And we let police officers from communities go to military schools to get our tactics because we know that we do the best training. And that's open to them. I tell them all the time, go talk to your lead officer because we've got slots in classes that you can go train by. And I think, you know, we're going down the road of really not knowing what's going to happen 10 years from now. Hopefully everybody be loving each other and be happy. But yeah. There's so much hate and discernment out there. It's so sad.
It is.
And I wrote an article one time, and I started out with, you know, I don't know why people want to kill me because they don't even know that I had a handicapped grandchild or that I was sick as a kid and maybe couldn't have made it. You know, why you want to kill me? Because you don't even know me.
Mm-hmm.
You yeah. know, and but I'll tell you, you have to be vigilant. And I can give you a quick, real quick scenario. Every eye is a sensor. I coined that phrase. We don't have enough police officers. We don't have enough people in the job. We need citizens that when you're at a mall, you see a baby carriage that's unattended, no baby in it. You don't know what's in the car. It could be explosives. And I worked at a mall. We had an incident where a third world country guy came in the door, worked for UPS, dropped a package off. It didn't have no label on it. I called security right away because that was my job in the past. They come down. They said, we're not going to get our wings. We're going to call the Eatontown police. They showed up. We shut a quarter of the mall down for like 4 hours. They brought the bomb squad in. They sniffed the box. They thought they smelled something, but it wasn't. And all it was a suit. And, you know, because the process of them not putting a label on it when they shipped it to us, it caused a big activity. It cost a lot of money.
But it could have cost a lot of lives, actually. But, Dad, we go ahead.
Dad, the police officer told me at the end of the day, he said, you know, I would still do the same thing because we could have had mass casualties.
Right. All right, Dad, thank you very much. Again, Mr. AT, yeah. Retired Air Force of 47 years. Thanks for your service. I do thank him that a lot.
Yes, Carl, Mr. AT joining us on the Quiver River Electric Cooperative guest line. Some people know him as Bo's dad. Other people know him as the space cowboy and the gangster of love. What would you do if your kid went to school every single day and he was tormented by bullies and the school administration did nothing? And then one day he comes home and says, Mom, I took matters into my own hands. This happened to a Missouri mother and son. We're going to talk about it next.
Listening to KMOX has never been easier.
Siri, play KMOX.
Bo Matthews, Amy Markscore sitting in for Mark Reardon. You know, Bo, you hear the cliche, use your words, you know, parents or teachers to kids.
Yes.
Don't bite, don't hit.
Don't bite?
Yeah. Well,
I guess that does need to be said at some point.
At some point. Bite. Those are the easy days when you're just trying to teach your kids not to bite. I think the problems just get bigger and have bigger consequences as the kids get older. But we talked earlier about a controversial assignment in one Missouri school, and we're going to go to another Missouri school that is making national headlines. Allison Davis posted a selfie picture of her son, Drew, the other day, who was suspended from school for, quote, beating up the kid that has been tormenting and bullying him since middle school. But the mom, Allison Davis, was not upset about her son's behavior. She said, not even a little bit. I know as a parent I'm supposed to be upset with him for resorting to violence or getting suspended, but I'm not, she wrote. Apparently, these bullies had been bullying her son Drew for years.
Yeah.
They had made multiple complaints to the school faculty. The school administration had done nothing about it, except at one point they had a no-contact contract between the two kids, which is basically a handshake saying, leave each other alone.
Right.
This poor kid had been tortured, bullied, made fun of, threatened, scared every day. And finally, he stood up to the kid, and I believe he punched him a few times. And the bully himself ran away crying.
Yeah, the play-by-play was actually three punches, and his bully screamed like a baby. His minion friends shut up, and this morning the bully wouldn't even look at him. Now, the first time I remember being bullied was probably in the fifth grade.
Yeah.
And it scared me because I was in a new school, a new town, and here I am. And these kids were like right behind me as we're walking down the sidewalk, and I was freaking out.
Was it threat of physical violence? What were they saying?
Yes. And actually, the kid said, "You see that tree? I'm going to put your face right through that tree." This is fifth grade, first day, brand new school. And I didn't understand that because all four grades before that were awesome.
Yeah.
But I also became really good friends with that guy that made that statement. I'll put your face through that tree.
Yeah.
He was one of my best friends through school.
What age though? When did you switch from him trying to violently assault you to being a good friend?
Probably within 3 weeks.
What?
Seriously.
Why?
You know what? I was just a new kid. I was easy prey. I was low-hanging fruit. I was heavy. I was overweight. Grew up in a donut shop. So I got it, honestly. And
so you grew up in heaven?
I did. And I'll tell you all about it. But I only had one fight in school, and it was in 11th grade, and I had to fight a kid. I had to.
11th grade is not messing around because those are big boys.
It was still fists. No tools, no weapons. It was just, you know, meeting across the street off school property. And I remember, and I'm not a good fighter. I mean, I hit hard, but I'm not a good fighter.
What was this fight about?
I don't know. It was whatever, just kids, you know, because in bullying's a big umbrella anymore. Is it digital bullying? Is it just making fun of each other? We talked about that earlier. But anyway, I remember throwing one punch at one point to the kid, missed him, and I did hit the toughest kid in school, who was the town bully. And
why was that guy so close to the guy you were fighting?
It was a circle.
Oh,
it was a circle. Just like Fight Club, right? Not a fighter, but
wait, so what happened after you hit the toughest kid?
He just laughed and it was over. But you know, you think about people making fun of each other can be considered in 2019 bullying. It's like, "Oh, I don't like your tennis shoes." Well, is that bullying or is it not? Or is it too sensitive? I actually, when I read this story, Amy, I was proud of this mom for supporting her son.
I was too.
Because when you don't get the authorities, which are frightened to do anything about anything a lot of times because they don't want to get in trouble, then it lands on the kid.
Right. Yeah. Good for this kid standing up for himself. And you know what? How frustrating for him that the authorities who were supposed to take care of him let him down.
Yeah.
He took the right recourse multiple times and it didn't pan out. But hey, we've got an exciting second hour coming up. We're going to talk about Santa Claus and cocaine. This all happened at Walmart, which may not be a surprise. I also have a question about texting etiquette. So stay with us. I have a question for you.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.